You could also help me brew them, Mum said. This time you won't fail. I looked down at the ground. I'd brewed countless potions with my mother, but they'd all failed. Without an infusion of magic, a potion was just a collection of exotic ingredients and pure water. I knew now how I could get that infusion of magic, but the memory of those failures still haunted me. Alana and Bella had rubbed them in at every opportunity. And Bella expects me to help her with her homework, I thought, feeling a flicker of tired amusement. She was just too lazy for school. I dreaded to think what her half-term report would say. Dad would probably hit the roof when he read it. But if I help her, I can get her to help me. I hope so, I said finally. Mum wouldn't want to be anywhere near when I brewed Caitlin's boost. The risk of an explosion was just too great. I didn't think Magistra Lawanda would let me brew it in school either. Not again. I might have to beg Dad to let me set up a potions lab in the summer house. But you won't, Mum said. She gave me a smile. We understand the problem now, dear heart, and we can learn to compensate for it. And find others, I said. I looked towards the thicket of close-knit trees, unwilling to meet her eyes. The opal garden was hidden behind the trees, a grim reminder that there were some things I would never be able to do. But it also offered a simpler way to find more people like me. And who knows what will happen then? Mum offered me the last sandwich, then started to munch on a hard-boiled egg. The world will change, she said, and the family will, as always, prosper. I took another sip of ginger. I want to go back to school, I said, and I don't want to go back to school. Is that normal? I was born in Pontefract, Mum said. She jabbed a finger northwards. For me, travelling to Shalott for my education was an experience, but I was also homesick, because even if I did manage to get out of the school, there was no way to get home in a hurry. My guardians were kind enough, I suppose, but they didn't really understand me. I looked up. You were fostered. In a manner of speaking, Mum said. My parents had a friend in Shalott. They gave him and his wife guardianship, just in case something happened that needed urgent attention. It wasn't bad, but they weren't my parents. And I didn't live with them, save for the occasional weekend. I can't say they ever really used their authority. Ouch, I said. I couldn't help feeling sorry for her. If I'd left Jude's, I could have walked straight home. What happened to them? They died shortly after I married, Mum said. She looked somber for a moment. They never had children of their own. I was the closest thing to a child they had, and they didn't really have me. They... Her lips twitched. Probably decided that I was too much work. You must have been naughty all the time, I said mischievously. I was a very studious child, Mum said primly. My parents often had to chase me out of the house just to force me to get some exercise. That's not what Grandmother says, I countered. She said you only studied so much because you were grounded all the time. Mum smiled. Grandchildren exist to allow grandparents to exact revenge on their children, she said wryly. Her face fell. My guardians barely knew me, to be honest. I was surprised when they remembered me in their will. I blinked. They did. I was left a number of books, Mum confirmed. You can find them in the library if you wish. Oh, I said. That was a surprise. Books, particularly ones produced before the printing press had been invented, were worth far more than their weight in gold. Mum's guardians must have thought very highly of her, unless they really hadn't had anyone closer to them who might inherit. I'll look for them when I have a moment. Not for a while, I think, Mum said. She packed up the picnic basket, then rose. Shall we get back to work? Yes, Mum, I said. How much more is there to do? Mum gave me an evil smile. Guess. Chapter 7.
I hope you've enjoyed your unexpected holiday,
my father said, as he surveyed the dinner table.
It will not happen again.
I kept my face expressionless as Alana and Bella groaned. A week off school probably wouldn't hurt their grades, not when they were already well ahead of a good third of their classmates. It wouldn't hurt Alana, at least. My sister might be a spiteful bully on her best day, but there was nothing wrong with her magic. She probably had some of the best grades in the year.
They'll be looking forward to us coming back, Alana said seriously.
She shot me a taunting look.
My friends keep asking what happened to me.
Because you're the head of your little gang, I thought.
Alana's name and position had ensured she had a gaggle of giggling cronies surrounding her at all times when she'd gone to school. Isabella had had a gang too. And if the head goes away for too long, the gang will go away too.
Pulling you out of school was the best of a set of bad options,
Dad continued.
It was important that none of you were in a position to make the rumors worse.
Ha, Bella muttered.
You'll be going back tonight, then resuming classes tomorrow,
Dad added, ignoring her.
I hope that you will take the time to reflect on your duty to the family as well as yourselves.
I peered around the family room as the maids brought in the first course. It was far more comfortable than the formal ballroom, although Great-Aunt Stregaria would probably have considered it too undignified for her magnificence. A large fire burned merrily in the grate. A sofa and three armchairs were perched against the walls, and lanterns hung from the ceiling, casting brilliant light over the scene. The portraits on the walls showed us, from birth to our last birthday. I couldn't help reflecting that we'd changed a great deal over the years. Alana was looking at me, her gaze hooded. I wondered, suddenly, just what Dad had said to her while I'd been working in the garden. She hadn't said anything to me since Great-Aunt Stregaria had stormed out, not even her usual mockery. And she hadn't tried to hex me either. It made me more than a little paranoid. Alana was bright enough to think of a way to get around my protections, if she put her mind to it. I was sure she was planning something. We ate slowly, savoring every bite. The food at Jude's wasn't bad, but the school cooks were trying to feed over 1,000 pupils. Henry and his apprentices only had to please the 5 of us. They could afford to take their time to craft a truly excellent dinner. The hunter's chicken was perfect, the mashed potatoes fluffy with a hint of cheese, the vegetables coated in something that made us want to eat them. I finished my plate and held it out for seconds. I definitely wouldn't eat so well at Jude's.
I will be inspecting your grades come winter,
Dad said, as he placed his knife and fork on his plate.
I will not be pleased if your grades do not meet my standards.
Bella winced. I felt a flicker of sympathy. Even if she worked hard for the next 2 months, it was unlikely she could bring up her grades in time for the winter holidays. Dad was not going to be pleased, even if there was a good chance she could keep herself from having to repeat the year. Her tutors probably already had a good impression of just how lazy she could be.
My grades are excellent, Dad, Alana said airily. I won't have to repeat a year.
And I will be very displeased if that turns out to be an empty boast, Mum said.
She signaled the maid to bring in the pudding.
I do not want to have to arrange summer tutoring for you.
Alana looked downcast, just for a second. For once, we were in perfect agreement. Summers were for playing games, for trying to forget that there was such a place as school. Dad had even promised to take us to the country estate, if we passed all of our exams. A summer of horse riding, swimming in the lake, and hiking through the cool mountains sounded very good to me. Alana probably felt the same way, too. And no one wants to spend their summers cooped up in a classroom, reviewing the material again and again, I thought. I'd learned to dread summer tutoring before I'd gone to boarding school. The tutors my parents had hired had been good, masters of their craft, but they'd been working with very poor material. We have to pass our exams.
Cat cannot pass her exams, Alana pointed out. She can't cast a single spell without help.
We'll take that into account, Dad promised. And so will her tutors.
But that won't count, Alana insisted. How can she be a magician if she doesn't have magic?
I felt my temper rise and forced it down, remorselessly. I might not get a high grade in practical magic, I said. I probably couldn't, even though I did very well with theoretical magic.
But does it actually matter?
No one asks an apothecary for his charms grade, Bella added. Alana blinked in surprise. I felt the same way too. It was rare, very rare for Bella to challenge Alana. I could count the number of times it had happened on the fingers of one hand. Bella had magic, unlike me, but she couldn't hold a torch to Alana. Alana would have no trouble hexing her into next week, if push came to shove.
That is true, Dad agreed. A single low grade doesn't make you a failure.
How true, Mum commented. I saw your potions grade.
Dad smiled rather dryly. I kept my thoughts to myself. Dad's potion grades had been average, but his charms and defense grades had gone through the roof. Alana had a great deal to live up to, if she wished to impress her defense tutors. Mum hadn't done badly in either charms or defense, but potions had been her first love. And I can't defend myself without objects of power, I thought. I'd better be very careful in the shower. I touched my sore ear as Dad launched into a long lecture on what one could and couldn't do with the various grades. It hadn't burnt that badly, and I'd rubbed salve on the burn as soon as I'd left the table. But it was clear the earrings would need to be improved. Great Aunt Stregaria had cursed me so hard that the earring had been damaged, perhaps completely burnt out. I didn't want to think about what might have happened if she'd tried to curse me again, before Dad had ordered her to leave. They have to be touching my skin, I reminded myself. I could lower the gemstones and their protective filigree a little, I thought, but that might risk losing the effect. Perhaps I should just stick with the simplest design. They might not reflect any incoming spell back at the caster, but they would last longer. I'll have to do some more experiments. Lucy put a cake in front of me. I gaped at it in surprise. Vanilla sponge cake, my favorite, crammed with whipped cream and raspberry jam. A birthday cake? It wasn't my birthday, and in any case, I shared my birthday with my sisters. I had never liked my birthdays.
It is customary to celebrate when a child shows the first sign of magic, my father said into the silence. And what you have shown definitely counts as magic.
Alana opened her mouth, probably to say something cutting, but Dad fixed her with a look that would have intimidated Sir Griffin's. My sister shut her mouth with a snap. Beside her, Bella was eyeing the cake eagerly. It might not be her favorite, but she'd eat it anyway. I'd often thought, I reflected as I picked up the knife, that Bella was lucky she was only a little pudgy. She just didn't get enough exercise. I cut a reasonably sized slice, placed it on a plate, and passed it to Dad. By tradition, the head of the house had to be offered the first slice. Dad made a show of inspecting it, then passed the plate to Mum. She smiled back at him as I cut the next set of slices. Alana took hers with a sharp nod, while Bella was eager to start eating. I could practically see her salivating as I cut the final two slices.
You may take the remainder back to school with you, Mum said as I moved the cake into the center of the table. I'm sure your friends will enjoy it.
My one friend, I thought. Unless I counted Aiken too. But he might not trust something that had come out of our kitchens. There isn't enough for the entire dorm. I sighed as I started to eat my slice. There were 9 girls in the dorm, all of whom knew, now, that I couldn't cast a single spell. They no longer doubted, they no longer believed I was a late bloomer. They knew I didn't have magic. And yet I had a talent of my own. Who knew how they'd treat me? Perhaps I should share out the cake, but there wasn't enough left to give all 9 a reasonably sized piece. And by tradition, I have to share anything eaten in the dorm, I reminded myself. Jude's traditions were set in stone. A student who abused the code of honor would be shunned and abhorred by everyone else. Thankfully, some of the traditions worked in my favor. But I'd need more cake.
This is very good, Bella said as she finished her slice. Can I have some more?
I think not, Mum said firmly.
She eyed Bella warningly.
I really do hope you pass your exams, because then we could spend hours in the mountains, walking from place to place, I thought wryly.
Mum would stand behind Bella with a whip if she tried to be lazy over the summer holidays. And Alana won't be happy either if we don't get to go.
Your trunks have already been returned to the school, Dad said.
I wasn't sure why he'd bothered to have them sent home in the first place.
Go to your rooms and change into your uniforms. Then meet me in the entrance hall. And do try not to be late.
I rose and hurried out of the room, trusting that Mum would ensure that the cake was wrapped up and placed in a protective box for the journey. Alana followed me, but did nothing as we hurried up the stairs and into our rooms. I frowned as I stepped into my room and closed the door behind me. She was definitely up to something. But what? The uniform, freshly cleaned and pressed, lay on the bed where one of the maids had left it. I felt oddly wistful, even though I'd hated the uniform the first time I'd worn it. A black skirt, reaching all the way down to my ankles, black shoes shining under the light, a black shirt, a black blazer, a single white band wrapped around my right arm, marking me out as a first-year student. Other than that, everything was black. I still looked like a professional mourner, I thought, as I changed into the uniform. It felt normal after having worn it for several weeks. I no longer felt ridiculous as I posed in front of the mirror, making sure everything was perfect. All I need is the funeral. Someone had folded a cloak at the end of the bed. I threw it over my shoulder. There was no point in wearing it unless it was raining outside, and then picked up my bag. I'd made more than just the sword over the last few days, including a handful of objects of power that should make life at school a little easier. It was a shame, I reflected, that there was no way to miniaturize the spectacles, although I had managed to create a monocle. But it kept falling out every second minute. I sighed, then took one last look around the room. It had been bare only a few short months ago. Now it was as finely decorated as Alana or Bella's room. My parents had promised me that I would have a fine room as soon as I cast my first spell. I couldn't help thinking as though I'd failed in some way, even though my talents were far more useful than either of my sister's magic. Alana could spend the rest of her life in front of a forge if she wished. It wouldn't let her craft an object of power. The clock chimed warningly. I turned and walked out of the room, closing the door behind me. I didn't bother to lock it, but there was nothing in the room I wanted to keep secret, if only because I'd long since learned how dangerous it could be to hide anything in a room my sisters tried to search every so often. Besides, the maids would need to clean it while I was at school. I just hoped they wouldn't mess up the bookshelves when they returned my books to the shelf. My father was standing at the bottom of the stairs, wearing his formal cloak and holding a box under one arm. Alana was standing next to him, looking sullen. I joined them and waited in silence until Mum and Bella walked down the stairs and nodded to Dad. Mum checked our appearances, gave us all one last hug goodbye, then watched as we walked out of the hall and down the driveway.
It's dark, Bella whined.
I rolled my eyes. Beside me, Alana snorted rudely. Dark or not, only a complete lunatic would dare to attack my father. His formal robes alone marked him out as a high-ranking member of Magus Court, which meant he was a powerful magician. And my sisters might have been young, but they were formidable too. I'd been told the streets of South Shallot were dangerous. Yet few footpads dared venture into North Shallot. The city guard would chase them out if they weren't transfigured into toads by outraged residents first. The air smelt of fish and brine as it wafted in from the harbour, down in Water Shallot. It made me feel wistful as we walked down the darkened streets. I dreamed of travelling once upon a time. although my real motive had been more to escape my family than to see new places. My family owned several trading ships, but the crews needed magic to steer. I had always assumed that I'd never be able to join a crew. Female sailors, with or without a certain level of magic, were rare. I saw a gaggle of young men emerge from a tavern as we reached the bridge and crossed the river. They chatted loudly amongst themselves, their words drifting on the air. I thought they were sailors, for a moment, before realizing that they were students. Upperclassmen, then. Upperclassmen who'd somehow escaped Jude's wards and gone out for a night on the town. My father sniffed in disapproval, but said nothing. Sneaking out over the walls was an old tradition, one that had never been snuffed out. The iron railings on the walls, designed to make life difficult for any would-be escapees, presented the sort of challenge that the school board felt built character. And Dad probably slipped out from time to time, too, I thought. It was difficult to imagine my parents being young. The portraits of Dad as a youngster might as well have belonged to my brother, if I'd had a brother. I'd inherited more than just the nose from my father. I wonder if he knew Mum when they were both in school. I pushed the thought aside. There were things I didn't want to think about my parents. As we reached Jude's, the iron gates loomed ominously over our heads, topped with wrought iron features that looked, in the semi-darkness, to be monsters perched on the metal. I tensed, despite myself. There were formidable defenses all around the giant school. If they decided we were unfriendly, we were in real trouble. A shadow materialized near the gatehouse.
"Report the Castellan and the, Lord Aguirre. I didn't expect you so late." "We meant to be earlier, Scullion," my father said.
He sounded oddly amused.
"Can you not report us to the Castellan?" "Of course, my lord," the man, Scullion, said.
I'd heard of the scowling gatekeeper who only came out at night, but I'd never met him.
"I'm sure you're not up to any of your old tricks."
Dad laughed as Scullion opened a smaller door in the gatehouse, allowing us to walk into the grounds and up the drive. I glanced at Scullion as we passed, recoiling in shock. His face was half-cloaked in shadow, but what little I could see was hideously ugly. He looked as though someone had cursed him repeatedly until his face was a misshapen mess. I couldn't imagine a more intimidating figure on the gates. We walked up the driveway, feeling a mixture of fear and trepidation. Jude's looked like a prison in the darkness, the shadows changing position whenever we weren't looking. The main doors were firmly closed, but the smaller door was open, a dark figure waiting inside. I told myself firmly that we were in no danger. Jude's wasn't really a prison. "It just feels like one," I thought.
"Greetings, my lord,"
Castellan Wealden said.
"Thank you," Dad said. "Alana and Bella can go straight to their dorms," Castellan Wealden said. "I need a word with Caitlin before she goes to bed."
Dad nodded.
"Here's the cake," he said, passing me the box. "Good luck, all of you."
He turned and walked back into the darkness. I wanted to call out to him, to ask him to take me straight home, but that would have meant abandoning Rose. I couldn't do that, could I?
You two are dismissed,"
the Castellan said, addressing my sisters.
"Caitlin, come with me."
I sighed. "Yes, sir." Chapter 8. Jude's hadn't changed at all, as far as I could tell. I walked behind Castellan Wealden, trying to calm the butterflies in my stomach. I wasn't in trouble. At least I didn't think I was in trouble. But the empty corridors and dimmed lights couldn't help but feel ominous. It wasn't that late. The lower-classmen would probably be in their dorms, even if they weren't in bed. But the upper-classmen should still be roaming the corridors. The Castellan led the way up a flight of stairs, down a long corridor lined with portraits of old boys and girls who'd made good, and into his office's antechamber. His secretary sat behind her desk, eyeing me with an expression that suggested she'd smelt something disgusting. I didn't think she was one of my fans. Rumor had it that she was actually a golem the Castellan had brought to life, but no one dared to ask. Personally, I couldn't help wondering if she was related to Great-Aunt Stregaria. Which would make her related to me, I thought, as we stepped through the inner door and into the Castellan's private office. And I don't want to be related to her.
"Please, take a seat," the Castellan said.
His voice was calm, as always. He seemed to have aged 10 years since I'd last seen him, although he was still quite young for his post.
"I assume you ate before you came?"
"We had dinner together," I confirmed as I placed my bag on the floor and took a chair. The question surprised me. None of the staff had invited me for dinner before, or any students as far as I knew. They preferred to have as little contact with us as possible outside the classrooms. "I should be fine until breakfast." The Castellan sat, steepling his fingers in front of his face, as he rested his elbows on the desk. My father had taught me that that was a sign of confidence, although he'd gone on to warn me that some men, and women too, were careful to project confidence even when they felt utterly unsure of themselves. I rested my hands in my lap and gazed back, trying to look as respectful as possible. There was nothing to be gained from being defiant, particularly when I probably wasn't in trouble.
"Your nature has caused us some problems," the Castellan said.
He nodded to a stack of papers on his desk.
"The school board has had quite a lot to say about it."
I nodded, wordlessly. My father had told me that the school board was largely useless. They woke up long enough to confirm the status quo, had a good meal on expenses, and then went back to sleep. But they would want to have a say when an important pupil managed to get themselves into trouble. Dad would have roused them from their slumber if I'd been expelled, after the potions incident. He might have threatened to do just that, after Rose had been expelled. The Castellan would not have wanted to get into an argument with a united board. They could overrule him if they wished. And the Triad probably had a say too, I thought. But what did they say?
"It is evident that you cannot handle a regular course of study," the Castellan added after a moment. "You cannot even hope to get through the practical exams, certainly not without help. On the other hand, you have a rare gift of your own, and it is our responsibility to ensure that you have the opportunity to develop it."
He paused, clearly awaiting a response, but I didn't know what to say. I wanted to stay, and I wanted to go. I wasn't sure what I wanted. To be told that I couldn't pass the exams, no matter how hard I worked. It stung. And yet I knew it was true. If I wasn't allowed to take objects of power into the testing chambers, I wouldn't last more than 5 minutes.
"We will be creating a customized course of study for you over the next few weeks," the Castellan said, when it became apparent that I wasn't going to say anything. "You'll stay in some of your regular classes, I think, and engage in private study for others. We'll be rearranging the timetable so you'll have the undivided attention of some of my staff. It will be difficult at first, but they're quite looking forward to working with you."
It was hard to keep from wincing. In one sense, I'd had special treatment all my life. In another, I hadn't had anything different from my peers. I might have had private tutors, but so had Isabella and the rest of high society. Now, I would be getting very special treatment, treatment that would not be offered to other magicians. Would having magic and the ability to hex me at will keep them from getting jealous? Probably not, I thought.
"Your new timetable will be ready by the end of the week, I hope," the Castellan informed me. "We held back on a couple of classes so you and your sisters could attend from the beginning. You'll understand why when the classes begin."
I swallowed. "Thank you, sir."
"It is my duty,"
the Castellan said gravely. He smiled, then leaned forward.
"And that leads to a less pleasant discussion."
He met my eyes.
"You are unique," he said. "That makes you valuable, at least until we locate someone else with your particular gifts. You will discover that a great many people will want to be your friend."
I didn't believe him. Not really. People wanted to be Alana's friend, not mine. I'd grown more and more isolated from the rest of my peers as my lack of actual magic became apparent. No one wanted to be friends with a failure, for fear the failure might rub off. Rose had been the first person to show me real friendship, and she didn't have anything to lose.
I advise you to be careful,
the Castellan said. His voice hardened.
And I order you not to leave the grounds without an escort. You are not to try to sneak over the walls and through the wards. I know trying to sneak out is an old tradition. I've done it myself. But you are not to indulge in it. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir, I said. I'd never planned to sneak over the walls. A young student wouldn't have much of a chance of getting through the wards. Not without help. Being trapped would be bad enough, but having the rest of the school laughing at them would be worse. I won't leave the school.
Make sure of it, the Castellan said firmly. You are too young to understand the dangers, Caitlin. But rest assured, there are dangers out there.
I winced. Jude's was neutral ground. Anyone who tried something on the school's grounds would become an immediate pariah, uniting the rest of Charlotte against them. But outside the grounds, suddenly all the horror stories about family feuds seemed very real. It had been a while since the last true conflict. Madge's court tried to keep them from getting out of control. But that could change at any time. I understand, I said. Perhaps that was why Dad hadn't ordered me to stay at home. The school was safer. Even families that detested mine would assist us if our enemies violated neutral ground. And I thank you.
You're welcome, the Castellan said.
He nodded to the door.
You may go. I believe your friend is waiting for you.
I rose, curtsied to him, picked up my bag and headed for the door. Outside, Rose was sitting on a bench. I ran forward and hugged her tightly. Tears prickled in my eyes. I'd missed her more than I'd known. She was the one person who'd been there for me when I'd been utterly alone. Cat, she said as she hugged me back. Welcome back. The secretary cleared her throat.
Go back to the dorms, she ordered curtly. You can catch up later.
I took Rose's arm and pulled her out of the office. I wanted to be back sooner, I said as I closed the door. I'm sorry I didn't make it.
It's all right, Rose said. We've been quite busy.
I looked at her as we made our way down the corridor. Rose looked more confident than I remembered, her long red hair glimmering under the lantern light. Her pale skin showed hints of makeup, carefully applied. Her white nightgown fitted her perfectly, drawing attention to her face and bright green eyes. I frowned, puzzled. Rose had never used cosmetics. She'd never been able to afford them. How could she? And she had her hair down.
Everyone has been surprisingly nice, Rose said, breaking into my thoughts. Well, except Isabella. She's been very sullen.
It's good to know that some things don't change, I said. I'd let Isabella stay in the dorm after the duel. Perhaps that had been a mistake.
The others have been nice to you.
Rose's hand brushed her cheek. Henrietta helped me with my homework, she said. And Aisha taught me how to use powder on my face. I felt a hot flash of jealousy, mingled with concern. Aisha was one of Isabella's friends, or had been one of Isabella's friends before the duel. No one liked a loser, as I knew all too well. And Isabella hadn't just lost. Her defeat had had repercussions that had echoed far beyond the school. I would have felt pity for her if she hadn't been so horrible to me. Her father would have been utterly furious when he found out.
I hope you're being careful, I said.
Rose had a right to other friends, didn't she? It was good that she was finally making headway with the rest of the dorm. And yet, part of me wanted to keep her all to myself.
What about the others?
They've been nice, Rose said.
She frowned as we descended the stairs.
It's been quite creepy, actually. I had to laugh. Maybe someone kidnapped our dorm mates and replaced them with identical twins. Rose giggled. That would explain a lot, I suppose. She elbowed me. Aiken was asking after you, she added. But I couldn't tell him anything useful. He could have just written to me, I said, although I didn't know if I'd get his letter. Dad would have a few things to say, none of them pleasant, about receiving letters from our family's great rivals. How is he? Doing well, as far as I know, Rose said. She rubbed her hand gently. He helped me out a lot in forging. I still haven't got the hang of it. I've been doing it for years, I reminded her. Maybe I should have felt jealous at the thought of Aiken spending time with Rose, but it didn't bother me. Not really. He was a good TA. Magister Tallyman had taken us both on as his teacher's assistants. You'll have a one star of your own by the end of your second year. Rose sighed. If I last that long, she cautioned. I'm still behind in theoretical magic. I'll help you with it, I promised. I wondered sourly why one of our dorm mates hadn't offered to help her learn that. Perhaps it was a worrying sign. A student who didn't have a good grasp of magical theory would never become an upperclassman. Rose could turn someone into a frog. I'd taught her that spell, even though I couldn't cast it myself. But she couldn't keep her victim that way without setting up the spell very carefully. And to do that, she needed a working understanding of precisely what she was doing. They might be pretending to be nice to her, I thought. But they're not actually being nice to her. I'm doing better at potions, too, Rose added. But my potions are still not perfect. You just need practice, I assured her. The basic potions we brewed in class were easy. I'd seen Mum sweating over a steaming cauldron where everything had to be utterly perfect or the potion would explode. And complete precision at all times. I sighed. Mum had drilled those habits into me from day one. It had surprised me that Magister Loanda hadn't been quite so obsessed with precision, although most of the basic potions were quite forgiving. She might think that a prospective potioneer would have the sense to read the recipe and instructions, and then prepare the ingredients before they started brewing the potion. And someone who didn't would learn the hard way when they had to scramble to find something before it was too late. I try, Rose said. I think it's the magic that really makes it hard. We'll see, I said. I had a whole series of experiments I meant to carry out as soon as possible. Rose would help, of course. Perhaps I could talk Aiken into helping too. That would really drive his sister up the wall. You're just starting out again. Rose shook her head in frustration. I used to cook on the stove at home, she said. I should be able to brew a potion. I think it's a little more complex, I countered. Henry might insist that his cooking was as complicated as any potion, but I had my doubts. Roast beef didn't care if you cooked it over the spit for 89 minutes or 91. And you're infusing magic into the brew. We reached the bottom of the stairs and walked down a long corridor. I tensed, despite myself, as I heard footsteps echoing from the far end. A moment later, a pair of upperclassmen walked into view, glaring at us both suspiciously. Rose fished a pass out of her pocket and held it up before they could say a word. They inspected the pass, their eyes flickering over us, then passed it back and walked on. I allowed myself a sigh of relief. We might have permission to be out of the dorm, yet the upperclassmen would have been within their rights to question us. Sneaking out of the dorms was a bad thing, but only if you got caught. That was close, Rose said. I wasn't sure if the pass covered you or not. I had to smile. The Castellan would not have been pleased if two meddling upperclassmen had dragged me back to his office. I had permission to be outside the dorm, at least for as long as it took to walk back. But he would also have had to back up the upperclassman's authority. I wasn't sure precisely how he'd react. I suppose I should have been glad that I wasn't going to find out. I'm sure it does, I said reassuringly. Sandy would have given Rose the pass,
ensuring that she could meet me without being given lines or sent back to the dorm by a prowling upperclassman. But even that might not have been enough if the upperclassman was in a bad mood. Rose had no family to protest if she was given a particularly harsh punishment. How is Sandy, by the way?
She seems to have mellowed a little, now that Isabella and you have settled your differences, Rose said. But I don't know if that will change.
I shrugged. I hadn't spent a night in the dorm since the duel. Who knew how Isabella would react? I stopped long enough to open my bag and remove a couple of items, slipping them into my pockets, then closed the bag and slung it back over my shoulder. The earrings alone would give me protection if Isabella decided to hex me on sight, but I knew I'd need more. It was clear that there were limits to what the earrings could do. I'll have to experiment with that later on too, I thought. Rose would have to help. She could make up for my lack of magic. And perhaps I can even improve on the design. We passed another group of upperclassmen, escorted by a teacher I didn't recognize. They didn't look remotely happy, something that suggested they'd been caught out of school and marched back to face the music. The city guard must have caught them, I reasoned as we stepped to one side and tried not to be noticed. Normally the Castellan and his staff would turn a blind eye to students who actually made it over the wall. I guess they'd gotten into a fight in one of the bars and wound up being arrested. And they'd probably be happier staying in the cells, I thought. The Castellan would be furious. They'd drag the school's name through the mud. They'll be in real trouble. Rose snorted.
That one in the middle, she said. He gave me lines for skipping down the corridor.
I snickered. I hadn't seen the one she meant. Upperclassmen all looked the same to me, but I could believe it. Even the responsible ones, like Sandy, acted as though us firsties were so far beneath them, we might as well be on the other side of the world. They certainly didn't remember when they were firsties. 5 years was quite a long time for a teenager. And now he's in trouble, I said mischievously as we reached the door. I wonder what will happen to him.
A million lines at least, Rose said. His hand will drop off.
I grinned. Sandy had sometimes threatened us with a million lines, but there was no reason to be excessive. A few hundred lines was more than enough to make my wrists ache. And here we are, I said. The door to Raven Dorm looked as forbidding as I remembered, a solid dark mass covered in protective runes.
Shall we go?
Rose nodded. I braced myself, then pushed open the door. Chapter 9.
Welcome home, Sandy called.
I felt my mouth drop open as my dorm mates greeted me. I'd never been popular, even among those who disliked Isabella and her cronies. But now everyone was coming at me. Everyone was greeting me. I flinched back as Clarion Bolingbroke and Gail Fitzwilliam hugged me, while Aisha and Zaya MacDonald shook my hand. It was hard, so hard to believe their greetings were sincere. Their hugs might be cover for a hex.
"It's good to see you again," Henrietta Maria said.
She smiled at me charmingly.
"I've been looking forward to discussing magical theory with you."
Aisha ran her hand over my hair.
"What did you put in it? It feels wonderful and soft."
I pulled back. It had taken me years to convince my mother that I didn't need elaborate hairstyles. A ponytail or plaits were enough, I thought, even though I apparently needed a fancy braid for formal occasions. I'd never been comfortable with the maids doing my hair for me either. I knew Lucy and the others wouldn't deliberately set out to hex me, but my sisters had left me wary of being touched.
"Just shampoo," I said.
I'd never really cared that much for my hair either.
"It's nothing special." "You have to let me braid it," Aisha said. "I could do a much better job with hair like yours."
She jabbed a finger at Rose.
"Her hair became more manageable after I gave her some proper shampoo and taught her a handful of grooming charms."
"And you let her leave the dorm without tying her hair into a ponytail," I thought sourly. It was late, and we were in school, but it was the sort of mistake that would have attracted some very astringent criticism from the old biddies of high society. Or did you think no one would care about her?
You're more than welcome to join us for study, Amber Allardade said. You can teach us how to forge, and we'll help you with potions and defense.
I shrugged, feeling a little overwhelmed. Sandy was sitting on her bed, brushing her hair and watching us with an unreadable expression on her face. Behind her I could see Isabella pretending to be asleep. She was just too tense to be actually sleeping. Someone had moved her bed so she was right next to Sandy. I doubted Isabella appreciated it. Being so close to the older girl ensured she wouldn't get away with anything.
"Perhaps you could join us tomorrow," Amber pressed. "We're going to be spending the evening watching netball."
Sandy smiled, rather thinly. "I think Caitlin will have to catch up with her classes," she said, her voice cutting through the babble. "There'll be time for netball later."
"There's always time for netball," Amber said.
Her voice became sweet with malice.
"Isn't there, Isabella?"
Isabella rolled over and looked at me. The cold hatred in her eyes was terrifying. I knew the school's honor code forbade her from taking revenge, now she'd lost a formal duel, but it still worried me. I hadn't just humiliated her. I'd knocked her right to the bottom of the dorm hierarchy. Her cronies, her former cronies, were above her now, peering down at their former leader with all the scorn and contempt they'd once heaped on me. She'll recover, I thought. Isabella was still Isabella Ruben, still one of the heirs to a powerful family. Memories would fade as time went on, giving her a chance to start again. And then, what will she do? Sandy cleared her throat.
"It is time you all went to bed," she said.
She clapped her hands loudly.
"Shower, dress, bed, sleep. I'll be dimming the lights in 15 minutes.
I shot her a grateful look as I hurried to my bed. I had no sensitivity to magic at all, but I could feel Isabella's cold gaze watching me. If looks could kill, and there were spells for that, I'd be disintegrated into ash. Rose followed me, her footsteps echoing through the room. Someone had moved her bed too, pushing it next to mine. With a little work, we could combine our curtains and share a bigger space.
"She's been very sullen," Rose whispered.
I put my bag down on the floor, then hastily checked the drapes for unwanted surprises before I pulled them closed. There were none, not even a single solitary hex. I frowned, concerned that I was missing something. Isabella might be barred from hexing me, although I was starting to think she didn't intend to abide by the honor code. But someone else might have decided to conceal a hex on my bed. It was the traditional way to welcome someone back to the dorm.
"I can tell," I whispered back.
I slipped one pair of spectacles from my pockets and perched them on my nose. The world changed color at once, waves of light pulsing through the stone walls, blurs of light shimmering over the other beds. My dorm mates had protected themselves thoroughly, Isabella most of all. My lips twitched. I had the sneaking feeling that even she would have to take several minutes to dismantle her protections before going to the toilet in the middle of the night. Sandy would probably have some problems getting Isabella up in the morning if she overslept. But my bed was dark and cold. There were no spells, no hexes to zap me into a frog if I touched them with my bare skin. No charms to keep my dorm mates from disturbing me with their snores. Even Rose had more protections on her drapes than I did. I felt oddly sure I was missing something, but there was nothing. My earrings didn't even get warm as I sat on the comfortable bed. Someone had taken the time to make up the bed and tied a pair of pajamas under the pillow, and placed my trunk at the end of the bed, but not to prepare an unpleasant surprise for me. I couldn't help feeling uneasy as I stood and pulled the drapes into position. Perhaps I was missing something.
"They were all pleased to see you," Rose said
after casting a basic privacy spell. I'd taught her to use it at all times. It was very basic, but the kind of spells necessary to break through it were banned in the dorms.
Are you going to spend time with them?"
It struck me suddenly that she was just as uncertain, perhaps even jealous, as myself. We'd been the dorm outcasts, the powerless girl of noble blood and common-born magician who'd been raised in the countryside, herding pigs instead of learning magic. But now I could find friends from my own caste if I wished them. I'd wondered if Rose would abandon me, now she'd found other friends. But she must have felt the same thing too.
No, I said.
Netball was boring, at least partly because I couldn't play. I could run and throw the ball with the best of them, but the spells? I'd be hexed out of the game within seconds.
I don't want to spend time with them.
I hesitated.
Did Aisha say anything about wearing your hair down?
Rose frowned.
No,
she said.
Why?
You're not meant to wear your hair down until you're old enough to marry, I said. It was late at night, and no one was expected to have their hair braided in bed, but someone would probably have said something if they'd noticed Rose outside the dorm. When you go outside, make sure you tie it up into a ponytail at the very least. Rose's cheeks reddened.
Thank you, she said.
She touched her hair.
Did she do that on purpose?
I shrugged. I doubted Rose's family cared much for high society rules. They didn't have the time to learn them, let alone the money to spend on proper clothes, etiquette lessons, and everything else a youngster needed if they wanted to be seen as a respectable member of society. It was possible that Aisha had set Rose up for some embarrassment, but equally possible that she simply hadn't considered it important, or noticed that Rose was leaving the dorm.
I don't know, I said.
I emptied my bag onto the bed, then picked up a focusing tool. It was a long wooden wand, decorated with carved runes. I thought it would be simple when I'd decided on the gift. But it had been surprisingly tricky to make.
This is for you.
Rose took the wand and waved it in the air. Sparks flew from the tip, dancing around her fingertips. I watched, feeling an odd mixture of delight and envy. My gift made me practically unique, and my training would give me an edge if I ever met another Zero. But I still didn't have magic. Rose would always have opportunities that I'd lack. But then the reverse was also true.
It's wonderful, she breathed.
It's designed to help you modulate your magic, I told her. With a little fiddling, you can use it to make sure you only use precisely what you need. Rose smiled.
Thank you.
Her face fell.
I didn't get you anything.
Don't worry about it, I said. She gave me a hug, then settled back to watch as I opened my drawer. A punishment book, a new punishment book, sat there waiting for me. I rolled my eyes as I picked it up, making sure that it was my name on the front cover. Someone had probably feared I'd leave the old book at home, out of sight and out of mind. They needn't have worried. Dad had made sure I'd packed it, along with the spellbook and a number of other textbooks. I put it on top of my clothes, then opened my trunk and started to cram my possessions into the drawer. They didn't seem to fit.
If you have two punishment books, Rose asked, which one is the real one?
Good question, I said. There was a complex linking charm binding my book to a master record, but I wasn't sure which one was the real one. Perhaps the punishments would appear in both books. Or perhaps the charm would get confused, rendering both books invalid. I'd have to experiment to find out. If I stick my tongue out at Sandy, do you think she'd give me 100 lines?
I don't know, Rose said. She's been acting weird lately.
Everyone has been acting weird since I returned, I muttered. I put the cake box aside. I'd share it later, outside the dorm. And then reached for my towel.
What's got into them?
The weirdness only grew stronger as we walked to the shower. I'd expected a hex or two aimed at me. I'd kept the earrings on, just to be sure. But nothing happened. Instead, my dorm mate smiled and waved as though we were the best of friends. I was almost grateful for Isabella's scowls and glares. At least that was reassuringly normal. Maybe they're just glad Isabella got knocked down a peg or two, I thought. The showers didn't look to have changed much, if at all. The only real difference was the addition of a number of bottles of expensive shampoo. Or maybe they're just trying to lure me into a false sense of security. I washed, changed into my pajamas, and walked back to the bed. Sandy was already dimming the lights, marching up and down the room and glaring at everyone who wasn't moving fast enough to suit her. Most of the students were pulling their drapes closed, trying to pretend to be asleep. I doubted Sandy was fooled, but she wouldn't say anything as long as they weren't blatantly defying her. A student who didn't get enough sleep would regret it the following day. "Cat," Sandy said. She nodded to Rose, silently ordering her to her bed. Rose complied without argument. "A word with you, if you please." I didn't please, but I didn't have a choice. Sandy led me to the front of the dorm, past a set of closed drapes. I hoped that Isabella was already asleep, instead of plotting revenge. The objects of power would give me some protection, but I was grimly aware that they didn't make me invincible. I'd grown up on too many stories of weapons that were supposed to do just that, but turned out to be flawed in some way. "I had a long talk with Isabella after the duel," Sandy said, once we were standing by her bed. She didn't bother to cast a ward to keep our conversation private. "I told her that I expected her to behave herself, and that I would take steps if she didn't." I swallowed. Sandy hadn't intervened between Isabella and myself until matters had really started to get out of hand. On one hand, she wanted a quiet life. On the other, we were both from powerful families, and alienating us, even just one of us, might have been bad for her future. And yet, I couldn't help wondering if I would have discovered the truth if Sandy had squashed Isabella on the first day. I might not have. And if I hadn't, I would merely have been condemned to endlessly repeating the first year again and again, unable to pass the exams that would let me move on to the second year. "I expect the same from you," Sandy added after a moment. "You won, well done. Now you and she can move on, without this petty little feud. I will not be pleased if you rub her nose in her defeat, nor will I be happy if she finds a new way to get at you. Do not defy me on this." "She started it," I said. I knew it was childish, but I couldn't help myself. "I didn't want a rival. I'm sure she's pleased to hear it," Sandy said sardonically. Having a rival to match yourself against was another school tradition, but it generally only applied to upperclassmen. Besides, I'd always thought it was stupid. Why would I waste time challenging a rival? "And I'm sure you're pleased to hear that she doesn't want a rival either." "Oh, goody," I said. Sandy gave me a sharp look. "I don't care which one of you started it," she said. Her tone dared me to disagree. "And I don't care that your families have been feuding for the last umpteen billion years or whatever. You'll learn to tolerate each other, or I'll chain you together and put you to work scrubbing the floor." "A fate worse than death," I said. "How amusing," Sandy said archly. Her lips curved into a humorless smile. "Isabella said the very same thing." I smiled back, although it wasn't particularly funny. Rose and I had been forced to scrub floors after the potions incident, a task I'd rapidly come to detest. Doing it with Isabella would be far, far worse. We'd keep exchanging barbs and insults until one of us snapped and tried to hurt the other, and then we'd both get in trouble for not cleaning the floor. I wasn't sure what was worse than being chained to my worst enemy and forced to cooperate, but I didn't want to find out. "Now go to bed and sleep," Sandy ordered. "I'll see you in the morning." I started to turn, then stopped myself. "Sandy, why is everyone acting so weird?" Sandy gave me a look that suggested she thought I was being stupid. "They're trying to get on your good side," she said, in a tone that confirmed she thought I was being stupid. "And they're trying to do it by buttering you up." She jabbed a finger at my bed. "Sleep." I walked back to my bed, my head spinning. They were trying to get on my good side. I'd never had that before, not after it was clear I didn't have much magic. Everyone had expected Alana to inherit the family name, title, and wealth. They still did, I suspected. I might have a talent of my own, but I still lacked magic. And yet, I couldn't help feeling uneasy as I pulled the drapes closed. I'd grown used to people treating me as though